Thanks. Thank you, everybody. I'm Nick Gillespie, and I'm here with Matt Welch. And what we're going to talk about today, we are, just in case anybody has forgotten or hasn't bought a bunch of hardcover copies for next Christmas yet, we are the co-authors of the Declaration of Independence, How Libertarian Politics Can Fix What's Wrong with America, which will be coming out in paperback with a new foreword, but that'll be coming out in May or June, which is good news to get the word out about the libertarian alternative to the status quo. Why Democrat versus Republican is the wrong way to view the 2012 election. And, you know, I guess we ask this when we talk in front of people and reason people we know a bit better, but how many people here are registered Democrats? Okay, there's a couple.
Including John Stossel, I want the record to show.
John Stossel. Well, he's a registered communist, actually. And how many are registered Republicans? Okay, a few more. And how many of you are either independent or registered independent? Okay, well, this is, it seems like a very... libertarian. We'll ask who's a registered libertarian. Okay. I was going to say this is a very lackluster crowd because I think only about 30% of hands went up. But, we are trained from, in utero now, I'm pretty sure, to think about politics in terms of Democrat and Republican for good reason. I mean, these are the two major parties, and, you know, we know that the next president, God help us all, is going to be either a Democrat or a Republican. But this is not the, in the end, or increasingly, it is becoming less and less important what the party labels are and more what the policies are. And at the same time that the labels are becoming less important, unfortunately, many of the policies that are being pursued by the Democrats and Republicans are becoming more and more similar. So what we're going to do today is talk about why Democrat and Republican, and this is not in a pie in the sky type of thing. We're not hoping for a third party that's going to be called, you know, the Ron Paul party, as good as he's been, and the injection of true alternative ideas into mainstream political discourse, or that the Libertarian Party is going to take over. But we need to start thinking about politics in ways other than Democratic and Republican. Matt, you want to?
Hi, everyone. And thank you all for reading the book, those of you who did, and talking to us about it. It's been very interesting, the reaction from various people, kind of surprised us, I think, as well. We just finished the foreword, which is on your thumb drive, for the paperback edition, and we had to resist the temptation of just writing a "we told you so" over and over again. Every poll that has basically come out since the time we turned in the original manuscript has just gone further in the direction of people disaffiliating from the two political parties. USA Today had a piece out in December. In the Obama era, I think was the timeline, basically 2.5 million people have dropped the registration, or there's 2.5 million fewer registered voters in the Democratic or Republican parties. Think of this. Could there possibly be a more fortuitous setup for the Republican Party than the last 3 years of Obama and what the economy has done? And yet in that time, Republicans have lost 800,000 registered voters. It's incredible. You have to work. It's Rich Dennis is here, so I'm going to make a lot of bad White Sox references, but you have to work as hard as Dick Allen to squander your talent or advantage as much as he did. Gallup has been measuring this. They measured every month, basically, and then in January of every year, they come out with, here's the number of self-identified Republicans, Democrats, and independents. They came out with a new one this January, measuring all of 2011. I think the final number now is 40% independents. They said it was the largest moment for independents in at least six decades. Those trends, as our book shows, it's basically doubled since 1970. It's accelerated in the recent years. There's reason to believe that in an election year, people will kind of crawl back into and listen to the dog whistle of two-party politics, but it's clear that this is where the long-term trends are going. And it's fascinating, and it's making politics more interesting and more possible. If you look, not yet, Nick. The first primary season for the Republican Party, getting back to their squandered advantage, voter turnout is flat to low. you would think that the Republican Party would be motivated to vote against Barack Obama. And it's actually much worse than flat or low turnout. If you look at people who self-identify as Republicans, they accounted for something like 86-88% of people who participated in GOP primaries in 2008. Now it's like 75%. The only reason that their numbers are respectable is that independents are flooding into the system, and those independents are voting for Ron Paul. This is by numbers of like 40%, close to 50% in some of the early primary states. This is producing a fascinating conundrum for the Republican Party right now, because basically the only thing with juice in the party of young voters, people under 29 have gone for Ron Paul, not so much in Florida, but in the other states, close to 50%. So this is the only future that the party has, and the party hates at least half of what that future is telling them. And so you have people like Bill Kristol saying we need to kick out Ron Paul and the movement surrounding him. It's disreputable. And then you have other people like Jim DeMint, who we'll talk about later, who is saying this is the most important new block of voters, and we have to figure out what to do with them. What this is also creating is unprecedented volatility. I don't know how many of you follow the website 538.com, Nate Silver's politics number crunching at the New York Times. It's very good. I commend it, particularly for every 2 or 3 days, he writes something along the lines of, with lots of charts and things, saying, okay, this one's unprecedented. We are in a situation we've never seen before. The vote swing in Florida went something like 30 percentage points in about 5 days between Gingrich and Romney. No one has seen that before. Every Republican nominee who won South Carolina has won the presidential nomination. Well, that's probably not going to happen. So each new day, because of these independents who are coming in and acting like swing voters, and because people who are even registered Republicans and think like Republicans are acting more like independent-minded people, that's creating volatility. Volatility isn't necessarily good, but it's an indication that things can change a lot faster than you supposed. Here is, I had to write it down, the list of people who, according to different polls, have been at various times front runners in the GOP presidential primary, whether they actually were in the race or not. Sarah Palin, Herman Cain, Newt Gingrich, Mike Huckabee, Rick Perry, Michelle Bachmann, and Donald Trump, at least. I think T-Paw never really got off the ground, but I think that's basically everybody. But Ron Paul so far has been a front runner at some point. Speaks to this volatility. There's a, if you look at the division between Tea Party affiliated Republicans and non-Tea Party affiliated Republicans, the non-Tea Party people flirted with a lot of various candidates, but basically since last fall have gone for Romney. And if you see a chart, which we don't have, of where enthusiasm has been among Tea Party affiliated Republicans, the chart looks like someone's having a heart attack. It's an EKG. It's someone new every day, which I again speaks to something good that's happening, but also speaks to something bad, which is to say, can you believe that after 3 years of strong public reaction to bailout economics, where we had the creation of a Tea Party from nothing, where Scott Brown won Teddy Kennedy's old seat, where every single, well, the California special election in May 2009 totally repudiated that sick political class's ideas of reform. Every single signal in the market for 3 years has been in one direction, and that has been for limiting, restraining government, reacting negatively to Obamacare. After all of this, the Republican Party is on the verge of nominating the person who created the individual mandate, who every single day on the campaign trail attacks Obama for cutting Medicare. I'll let it sink in. Who says that we've gutted the military to unprecedented levels. I have no idea what the hell he's talking about. So we have a guy who is not talking at all about cutting the size and scope of government, who's looking like he's going to be the nominee. So, which is fascinating. It speaks to that the modern Republican Party, after its own collusion in misgovernance for a long time, hasn't figured out what it's going to be. The classic was supposed to be a three-legged stool of fiscal conservatives, social conservatives, and defense hawks. Kind of unclear you know, where does Newt Gingrich fit on that? We don't really know. So I hear
Gingrich
a lot.
Gingrich has been advised by both his doctor and furniture makers not to sit on stools.
I hear from a lot of free market people in Washington focusing on what to do this year, how to think about the election, people who are more Republican than I am, which isn't hard to do or hard to be, that they're not focused on the presidency, that the thing to do this year is to think about the United States Senate. You need more Rand Pauls, you need more Pat Toomeys, you need more Mike Lees coming in, and you need to ultimately win arguments more than win presidential elections. I mean, just looking at the field of Republicans, Gingrich is going around saying that this is the most important election in all of our lifetimes. They say that every time. It's always not true, and I don't think this one is any more true than other ones. But we had a non-Obama president recently. His name was George W. Bush. It wasn't all puppy dogs and rainbows back then either. So the point, I think, in getting involved with politics and thinking about it and how to use independence is to create more people who are talking proactively about freedom and about limiting, averting the fiscal calamity that's going on. I don't know how many of you watched Mitch Daniels' response to the State of the Union address the other day or the other week. It was this weird moment of, here's a guy actually talking about the problem that we face in a way that I haven't seen in a Republican debate, and I watch all those damn things. I haven't really seen out on the stump very much. So it speaks to, we don't really know where Republicans' heads are at right now. We need to create more incentives for Mitch Daniels type of approach going forward. And with that, I'll hand it over to
Yeah, it's so, you know, being Republican is not enough to counter Obama. And I guess, you know, to bring back, if Democrat versus Republican is wrong, is the wrong way to understand things, being a Republican is not enough, because the Republicans are not the mainstream, or I don't want to say the mainstream candidates, the presumptive nominee, Mitt Romney, is not offering an alternative to Obama. In a lot of ways, he was Obama before Obama was born. So this is a screen capture from Fox News Channel, not Fox Business, by the way, I want to point out, which is the greatest channel on all of TV and all of history. And I do mean that, actually. But on Fox News, this was a while ago, you know, and Fox News is pretty much in the tank for Mitt Romney or for the Republicans, and even they have trouble identifying Obama and Mitt Romney. If you notice there, they actually slotted in a picture of Obama. So that this is kind of where we are, and this is where Republican and Democrat doesn't get at it, because the Republicans, with the exception of Ron Paul and then, you know, Gary Johnson, who's split off and is now making what I think is going to be an interesting and useful run as a Libertarian candidate, nobody's talking about spending, which is the real issue. It encapsulates all the other issues that are at stake here, including Obamacare, including military spending, including whatnot. This is the Congressional Budget Office just recently released its updated scenarios going forward. They released two, basically, and they one is the baseline projection, where they actually take politicians at their words. And they say, okay, you know what, when politicians or when lawmakers say, we're going to cut this and that, you know, a couple of years down the road, we've never cut it in the past, but we're going to do it now, they put it in. And that's the baseline projection. And this is, so if you listen to politicians, you know, going forward from 2011, we have a baseline projection where magically spending goes down. And then even politicians can't lie enough, where they're like, oh, you know, in 2022, though, we're going to start spending more again. The alternative fiscal scenario is the one to look at, because that's generally considered the realistic scenario. So the baseline projection says things, you know, it takes politicians at their words that they're going to actually cut the reimbursement of Medicare to doctors, which by law they have been supposed to be doing now for over a decade and have never done. That they're not going to patch the alternative minimum tax, so they'll actually collect a lot more in revenue, even though they've changed, you know, they make an AMT patch every time they have to. So the alternative fiscal scenario is actually the more likely outcome. And even that is a rosy scenario. But this is the question, the spending. When is the last time that you heard Mitt Romney or Newt Gingrich talk about actual spending cuts that they're going to make, year over year spending cuts? Anyone? Newt Gingrich is focused on a moon colony, which is, I mean, and he doesn't even pretend that he's going to take that from starving children or ship, you know, grammar school kids to be the janitors and the miners on the moon or anything. He's like, no, we'll just layer that on top because it's really cool. And I support a moon colony. I support Newt Gingrich being, the first colonist on the moon. But it should be done with private dollars, and maybe he can swap his Tiffany line of credit, as seed money for getting at least to the outer reaches of Earth's gravitational field. But, and Mitt Romney does not talk about cutting anything. As Matt said, he is running, as the man who invented the program or signed off on the program that became Obamacare. He runs around saying that I'm going to protect Medicare, which is not simply an alternative. Medicare is part of the problem, and this is part of the problem with repealing Obamacare, which can be done and which hopefully will be done immediately, or it won't even go into practice depending on a couple of Supreme Court rulings, and we can talk about that later. But Medicare is the problem, because let's pretend that Obamacare never happened. That it was voted down, and it was never popular among the general population. And interestingly, as it gets closer to being put into place, it gets less popular with people. And as we actually, we all remember Nancy Pelosi saying, we've got to pass this bill so we can find out what's in it. As the details are dribbling out, it's like, it's like another Pokemon movie or something. When you hear more and more details of the plot, you don't want to go see this movie. Even if you're Herman Cain, which is also, by the way, if you're a Republican, I know there are a couple hands up, consider that you are part of a party where for a while the leader in the GOP primary race was Herman Cain was quoting lines of dialogue from the Pokemon movie. That is pretty stunning. But in any case, the real issue is spending, and yet the New York Times had an article that was pretty interesting talking to a bunch of GOP operatives. Their big plan, their big play going now until the election is to talk about the Keystone Pipeline and Obama's refusal to okay that, which is it's a good issue and it's a solid issue. It's something that should have been built. There were actually a lot of Democrats who were in favor of doing that and whatnot. It's a sign of how idiotic and awful Obama is as a president. Across the board. I mean, there's really nothing good to say about Obama. But if you are a Republican and you're supposed to be an alternative to Obama and you're not talking about spending, which went up under your own party and then really went up under Obama, and debt, taxes, the implications for taxes, for credit ratings, and all of that type of stuff, and you're talking about the Keystone Pipeline, you're not talking about what is really important and also what's going to turn the economy around. So this is one of the reasons why Democrat versus Republican doesn't matter. If Mitt Romney's not talking about spending as the issue and as the main issue, which takes precedent over everything, he's pretty useless. And you know he's going to be useless when he gets into power.
And one way of also thinking about that is that if he's not going to talk about that now, when he's not in power in this climate, when's he going to bring it up?
Yeah, and the Republicans, I mean, this is, as a lot of you know, I split time between Ohio, southwestern Ohio, and D.C. John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, is my congressman. Just a couple weeks before the 2010 election, he released a plan that was going to be the Republican roadmap to cutting government. And in that program, he didn't cut anything. He's like, you know what, we're going to zero out 100% of things that don't include Medicare, Social Security, defense spending, and a bunch of other pet projects. I mean, he laid out a scenario by which he was going to be draconian on exactly about 2% of the budget. And even then, he wasn't going to cut it completely. So we know that these are not the people that we're going to, you don't want them in a bar fight, you don't want them at your back in a bar fight, and you don't want them with a majority, with a clear majority in the government. But the other real issues, these are ones that show the power of moving beyond the Democratic and Republican labels. And this is, our book is premised upon the idea that independents are growing in number, and that they're growing in number for rational reasons, that everywhere else in our lives we're getting more individualized treatment, we're getting more personalized understanding, and we're debundling and delinking things so that, you know, you don't, Kodak, you know, which just filed for bankruptcy, is about to, you know, one of our controlling metaphors is Kodak used to force you to develop 12 pictures or 24 pictures or 48 pictures to get the one or two that you wanted. Technology and other things routed around that. So we don't have to do that anymore. And Kodak treated us like captives who would always have to go to a photomat booth, who would always have to use their film, and they're gone now because they didn't adapt and they didn't realize that the, you know, power and longevity comes from enabling individuals to do what they want to do and to create their own worlds, not forcing them to take a bundle of options that don't have anything to do with one another. And that the Republican and Democratic parties have been doing this all along. The Republican parties say, hey, if you want to trim the top marginal tax rate, you know, by a quarter of a percent, come on, you're on our team, and by the way, you also have to sign on to wars without end, you have to sign on to the drug war, etc. Democrats might say, if you want, you know, if you want to have access to abortion or to reproductive choice, you've also got to sign on to super high tax rates, as if these two things are inextricably linked, as opposed to a bundle of options that everywhere else in our lives we're starting to say to the people we buy things from or do business with, no, just give me what I want. Don't load me up with a bunch of other stuff. So that's why independents are growing, and independents are increasingly nonpartisan. They're disaffiliating with the Republicans and Democrats, and this is showing up in some freedom issues that have been in the news lately. How many of you followed the protests against the Stop Online Privacy Act? Okay, or Piracy Act. Yes, SOPA, and its House version, PIPA. This is a fascinating thing where you had Democrats and Republicans pushing this bill. There was a broad consensus, and then you had all sorts of people, including, you know, Google and Wikipedia and whatnot, creating a true pushback that was not partisan in nature. Chris Dodd, the former senator from Congress, or from Connecticut, who's now the head of the Motion Picture Association of America, was one of the major lobbyists for this bill because it helps move, or they think it helps movie companies and big content providers. But he went to Republicans and Democrats and bought their votes to push this, which would have given the government unprecedented control over basically certifying or decertifying websites in ways that were perhaps not as apocalyptic as some of the critics of the bill thought, but it certainly needs more time, and it was a bad law. People rose up against that and shut that down for the time being. It'll keep coming back, but this was fascinating to see a broad-based Tea Party-style revolt by the people most affected by a piece of legislation. You know, and these are the issues that are being increasingly addressed in nonpartisan ways. Drug legalization initiatives. Rob Campia, who David pointed out last night from the Marijuana Policy Project, is here. There are drug legalization initiatives around the state in places like California, Washington State, Colorado, that are polling extremely well, and they are made up not of traditional Democrats and Republicans, but by broad-based coalitions that are really shredding the envelope in terms of taking giant steps forward towards liberating people from really bad, stupid laws. Increasingly, state-level changes are also somewhat following suit. Indiana had an interesting right-to-work initiative that got passed, largely a Republican doing. With Mitch Daniels, who's leaving office soon, so he feels that he's bulletproof in a way that people like John Kasich and Scott Walker in Ohio and Wisconsin might not be. It's good. They actually had a bunch of Democratic co-sponsors for that type of stuff too, because enough people there are starting to realize that if you're in the industrial Midwest, you know, getting being, you know, having 100% union representation of 0% jobs doesn't really even, you know, if you're a union boss, you're not even making any money off of that anymore. But then in states like New York, Andrew Cuomo has actually in various ways made cause with certain Republicans to push back on public employee unions. It's tricky, and he's already, unfortunately, starting to kind of present a lot of ugly family traits, and he's backsliding on certain of his answers. But we're starting to see at the state level these kind of transpartisan or coalitions that are growing that are not strictly partisan anymore. California is an interesting test case, not simply because it's so huge as an economy and as a disaster, but because the Republicans are so small there. What is happening, though, is that within there are pockets of Democrats there who realize that Jerry Brown, who most recently was talking up the high-speed rail initiative, which is wildly unpopular. He was talking about it as, that it's a latter-day version of the Great Pyramids at Cheops, which, wonders, whether or not he should be the first person buried in the high-speed rail system or not. And now Matt is actually going to talk a bit about, and this is pulling off of another main theme of our book, of how when you start getting beyond the partisan labels, what is the political power and the power for social change that comes from political independence?
It's we talk about in the book about using independence as a weapon, and it's interesting to see how that was used in November of 2010. You'll recall the House became Republican again. There's a new sort of Tea Party generation, and the comments from some of the pre-existing Republicans on Capitol Hill in that first week were fascinating. Matt Kibbe can tell the story for FreedomWorks better than I can, I'm sure, but basically John Boehner and Mitch McConnell said, okay, kids, all that earmark stuff, it's a good way to win election, but the adults got to do business here, go put on your big boy pants, and they turned the other way on earmarks, and the Tea Party right, which had just elected them, said, no, you can't do that. They changed John Boehner's behavior. I think he probably still cried, but he had to pass earmark reform because of that. Jim DeMint, who's sort of leader or a leader of the Tea Party caucus in the Senate in those first days, made a comment of, you can't be a fiscal conservative and not be a social conservative. There are these shots going across the bow. There was a piece in, I think, the Wall Street Journal by Arthur Brooks, head of American Enterprise Institute, I think Ed Fulner from Heritage, and somebody else who might as well have been John McCain. Let's just call him John McCain. Bill Kristol, yes, okay, so yeah, John McCain. Which is basically, welcome to Washington, Tea Party, don't touch defense at all. So all these things were happening. Now look at what Jim DeMint is saying. Jim DeMint, who endorsed Mitt Romney in the 2008 cycle. He didn't endorse anybody this time around, and he spent a lot of time talking about the virtues of Ron Paul, saying to the Republican Party, we have to listen to him. We might disagree with him about a couple of things, but this is where all of the future of the party is coming. We need to, and as the quote here, for those of you who can't read, type, one of the things that's hurt the so-called conservative alternative is saying negative things about Ron Paul. I'd like to see a Republican Party that embraces a lot of the libertarian ideas. DeMint's flipping a bit. He came to our office on Tuesday of this week. He's got a new book out called Now or Never, I think, and that's basically talking about the fiscal catastrophe that we face in a very kind of direct way. And so he was hyping the book, but he was spending a lot of the time basically saying, reaching out to libertarians via us, and that it has to be the future of the Republican Party. And he kept putting it that, once I know that you are serious about cutting government, as serious as I am, then we can have some other conversations. And in fact, we had some of those other conversations after the camera stopped rolling, where to our shock, he was saying things like, yeah, so we can start having conversations about things like the drug war. About that, this is from Jim DeMint, who's been a drug warrior, as far as I know, for his whole career, and about closing down a lot of our bases abroad, and realizing that military spending is not the same as defense spending. And he was championing the way that Ron Paul was articulating defense issues. That is a sea change in Jim DeMint's behavior, and part of it comes. I mean, maybe it's an intellectual rationing, or maybe he's just figuring out that, like every party in opposition at the moment, libertarianism looks awful good for a week and a half. But it's, I think, using independence as a weapon against the likes of him is changing that kind of behavior. Looking forward, we can only hope, we haven't quite seen it yet, that the especially civil libertarian left, the anti-war left, will begin, and the anti-drug war left will begin seeing this as a tactic. We saw in Occupy Wall Street, which has kind of crashed and burned, deservedly so in many ways. But you saw people thinking through how can we use the tactics of the Tea Party, including the tactics of independent, to change behavior. I don't think Occupy Wall Street will change any helpful behavior, but we would hopefully we'll see some of that chipping away at things like the drug war in places like Washington and Colorado. I think it's fair to say in this very volatile moment when things can swing so much that the next major breakthrough for freedom or in this direction is probably going to come from people who are using independence as a tactic and as a personal lifestyle.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys. Thank you.